The Digital Press Podcast has returned. I'm Frankie.
I'm Gabe.
I'm Mike.
And I'm still Frankie. And we're back. Can you believe it, guys? We're actually back.
Into a while.
We all escaped from that prison camp that we were in on the other side of the galaxy.
Yeah, well, new location, so Batman doesn't find us this time.
Batman always manages to find us, but, you know, that's just the price of being supervillains. You know, he's always going to find us. But being a Batman supervillain, we all want Batman to find us, or else...
Because we want to give him permission to die.
That's right. Exactly. And we have to tell him that we are Gotham's reckoning. But other than that, we're back. And we're back, also.
Yeah.
So what have you guys been playing?
Oh, jeez. Recently finished Halo 4. That was the last game I beat. And I was actually very pleasantly surprised with how well it turned out, considering it's the first one without Bungie behind it. But also in terms of, not just gameplay, but graphics-wise, I'd say it's probably the best-looking game I've ever seen on the 360, which, for me at least, was the biggest surprise.
Well, the Halo games should always be like the benchmarks and the hallmarks and the start points and the end points for an Xbox system, right?
Yeah, they should be. Halo 1 and 2 definitely were, but Halo 3, I think at the time it came out, was not really a benchmark title. I would say Gears of War at the time was.
Gears of War was better looking, better piece of technology on the 360. Interesting.
In that time frame.
I never got into the Halos. I tried desperately with... the first Halo... I had my original Xbox at a point in time where I did not have four local friends that would play like multiplayer online.
Ah, you missed the best part.
Offline,
16-player LAN.
Yeah, no LAN parties.
So much fun.
And I got in too late on Halo 2. Online was already full of people who were like either so exceptionally good that there was no room for new players,
or they were cheating.
Yeah,
they've gotten better with that, stopping cheating over time. I mean, it still happens, but
there seems
to be more concerted effort to.
Well, there's patches too.
Yeah.
Last gen, there was practically no way to stop it through software updates. I mean, a few companies, to their credit, managed to like fit patches onto memory cards.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Star Wars Battlefront 2 had downloadable patches a couple times for balance issues or actual bugs that. Took up like 90% of a PlayStation 2 memory card. But that's cool.
Well, the Xbox did have patches.
The original Xbox,
it was the first, I'm going to say it's the first console to have downloadable patches.
But it wasn't as commonplace business practice as it,
I mean,
we expect day one patches now. Like,
unfortunately.
If I get a new game and I put it in, if it doesn't say version 1.1 available, I'm like, something's not right here.
This game's not going to be
It's going to be broken. I'm going to turn it on. It's not going to connect or something. But no, that's... Yeah. What about you, Mike? What are you playing?
Since I've recently gotten an SD to SNES, the new flash card for the Super Nintendo...
Unlike my ghetto Super UFO Pro 8 $50 card, you got the high-end...
Yeah, because...
The Cadillac of Super NES flash cards.
It's fun, you know, rediscovering a lot of the old games that I haven't played in, you know, a few years. Messing around with the Dr. Mario a lot on the Super Nintendo, the Tetris and Dr. Mario.
That was such a great song.
Don't tell me you got that just so you could play Dr. Mario. Don't tell me you got that just so you could play Dr. Mario.
Wouldn't you?
now explain the card you got, the SD to SNES.
How it differs from other flash cards?
Yes, I mean, for those not in the know, it is a Super NES flash card, which means it looks like a Super Nintendo cartridge. You put in an SD card or media card, and you put it in your Super Nintendo, and you get a menu system where you can boot up games from the flash memory.
Yeah. It's basically the same as other flash cards in that, you know, same style in terms of, you know, booting it up, get the list, and everything like that. I guess where it differs most is the fact that it's updatable. It's expandable. So basically, instead of it being where it has its functionality and its lack of functionality, and that's it for the rest of, you know, forever, here, work can be done to expand its abilities. So things like special chip games, like Super Effects, the SA-1.
So it's got all the hardware on it to play all those?
It's got hardware that can potentially support it. Like, it doesn't support it just yet, but through firmware updates, it can potentially, you know, at some point.
Interesting. Now, what I do like about the card that you bought is that I had a chance at Classic Gaming Expo to play a homebrew, I guess you could call it, or a home-programmed version of Road Avenger, the classic Data East Laserdisc arcade game where you're, I mean, that was featured on Sega CD in the U.S. probably most prominently as Road Blaster is the original arcade game. Road Avenger is the Sega CD game.
Yeah.
On the Sega Laser Active, it was Road Prosecutor.
Yeah, yeah.
But people might know it as the Laserdisc arcade game where you're driving a red sports car and it looks like Mad Max kind of, or like Punk Rockers and you're driving through, like...
Yeah, they're thugs.
They
run you off the road, kill your wife, so you got to go and kill the gang.
He has a really good theme song on the Sega CD that's only on the Sega CD version. A really, like, hard rock theme song.
It basically was... the whole thing is the brainchild of Bew, who created the BSNES emulator.
Yes.
He basically created an expansion chip that doesn't actually exist. He emulated a chip that doesn't actually exist as a chip, but could potentially exist.
Okay.
That it basically gives four gigabytes of space for CD quality audio and full motion video, things of that.
Yeah, like this thing runs beautiful full motion animation video. The game is a Laserdisc arcade game that ran like really colorful, vibrant, like Dragon's Lair style cartoon, probably more traditional animation, looks something like a Robotech cartoon from the late 70s, early 80s. And it looked awesome on the Super Nintendo. Like, and I've played a Road Avenger, Road Blaster, whatever you want to call it, in a lot of different forms, and this is one of the better ones. I was really impressed by it on a friggin' Super Nintendo, thanks to the technology in this card.
Yeah, so what they did was basically by having the SD2S NES support this chip called the MSU1, it can play these homebrew games that are somewhat reminiscent of what I suppose a CD enhancement for the Super Nintendo would have been.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's kind of what it does.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So we finally got our Super NES CD.
Yeah.
You know, so Sony took theirs and made PlayStation 1, but we get it now in the form of this this awesome add-on and this flash cart. I only have the Super UFO, Super Pro 8, which is the bargain-priced one. It doesn't have all that extra stuff on it, but it still essentially does the same thing. You put in an SD card with all your Super NES ROMs on it, and you could boot up your Zelda, you know, or Saturday Night Slam Masters, or Castlevania, Super Castlevania 4, you know, you boot them up, and they play, and it has onboard memory where it'll save the game, or you can copy your save game out onto your SD card, and you could save it for a later game if you want to swap out games in the memory bank. It's really interesting. And incidentally, my Super UFO Super 8 and my portable Super Boy, the portable Super Nintendo system that was recently made, it was a clone of a Super Nintendo and it's shaped like, you know, like kind of like an Atari Lynx, were the only things that I had that still had a charged battery in them during the week of Hurricane Sandy here in New Jersey. So I wound up playing a lot of Super Nintendo during that time. I managed to get about like 6 hours of play out of that thing, intermittent, like, you know, play sessions between.
Pretty good battery life.
Yeah, it's not. It's really not bad, the Superboy. People, you know, I think between 3 to 6 hours, depending on if you have the volume cranked and everything, and if you're playing a game that's, I guess, really intensive, whatever the CPU is, right? Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that, despite having no power, no heat, no electricity, no hot water. We were out for like 8 days with no power, so I got a couple hours worth of fun out of that.
Yeah, it lasted longer than my Vita did during the storm.
The storm was rough for video gamers.
Well, rough for a lot of people, unfortunately.
Yes. So.
Way to kill the mood, guys. Yes.
But on an up note, I've been playing through and enjoying Assassin's Creed 3. That's what I've been playing. I think it's better than some of the, I understand I'm in the minority. Like, I personally did not really enjoy Assassin's Creed 2 and the other two games in the Ezio trilogy as much as some Assassin's Creed fans, as much as the majority of Assassin's Creed fans. And that is probably due mostly in part to the fact that I just, from the get-go, right out of the gate of Assassin's Creed 2, I could not get behind Ezio as a character who is a badass assassin who helps to really form the guild of assassins in that time period, and the Renaissance in Italy. And I just didn't like him. I just didn't like Ezio. I'm sorry, people, viewers, I did not like Ezio, but I do like Connor in Assassin's Creed 3. I am behind Connor all the way. Connor Kenway.
Compelling characters are important.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to play three games where I feel like the main character is kind of goofy and he's supposed to be a badass assassin. And but good for Ubisoft for giving us a little bit more human, a little more comical or whatever. Ezio had moments where he was almost goofy. He was kind of like Roger Moore.
Yeah, well, he was an Italian playboy.
Yeah, he was. He was an Italian playboy. Did you play the Assassin's Creed 2?
I went through Assassin's Creed 1 and 2 completely. Mm-hmm. I started the one after Assassin's Creed 2, which I think was Brotherhood.
Which most people consider the high point.
I never got too far through it. Not that I didn't get into it. It's just that I think I got wrapped up in something else at the time. But I did like where they were going with it, where you could take control of Desmond out of the pod and go explore the town from Assassin's Creed 2. That was actually one of my favorite parts of what I did play. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool because my favorite character has actually been Desmond throughout. I did like Altair. I thought he was pretty cool.
You get some good Desmond in Part 3. That's the most meaty Desmond content in the entire...
Yeah, he's slowly been given a bigger part as the games go on.
He has to. Yeah. He is... You are in his DNA.
Yeah, exactly. Especially. Well, he's your point of reference throughout the series.
Yes. He is your constant.
Yeah.
To make a lost reference.
Yeah, very nice. See what you did there.
Did you play them?
No. Unfortunately, I've never gotten around to playing any of them, actually.
Well.
I've heard good things.
I'll try not to spoil anything.
Sorry.
The good things about the Assassin's Creed series are if you have a tolerance for the following. Because these games are essentially all imperfect from the first one on. And Ubisoft has made, I don't think they've made lavish promises, but I think that they've kind of presented a series of games that have aspired to be really grand. And if you put them under the microscope, they're all kind of disjointed and imperfect. And they're kind of like a Grand Theft Auto or a Red Dead Redemption where there's like, so much to do that it feels like it's like infinite, but then it really is just a bunch of minutiae. You're just running around to all these different things, and you're doing fetch quest here, you're doing a single assassination here, you're doing hunting here, and at the end of the day, if you add up all the actual main story where you're talking and walking and interacting with the people who are really important in each game, it's like maybe 40% of everything that's in the game. The rest is all these little fetch questy, like single, like minutia. But I'm the kind of person that loves doing all that stuff. I get so easily distracted on my way. And I think they build the games in a way that you can be set off on your main quest and it gives you your exclamation point on your map where you have to get to that section to get to the main portion of the game, but there's 100 things on the way that are blinking on your map, like collect this feather here, get to this synchronization point here, here's a side story here, here's the thing over here where you can make money, and I'm like, oh man, I want to kind of clear all that stuff up before I get to the story.
Well, that's kind of what Grand Theft Auto really pioneered, the idea that the game is about experiencing the world at large. It's not necessarily point A to point B, it's about what happens in this world, and how you want to experience it. So, I mean, there's definitely good that can come out of that kind of minutia, as long as the world is compelling enough to support it.
Yeah, I mean, and people keep buying these Assassin's Creed games. They're annualized. They've got multiple huge teams working on them. They don't really get terrible scores. I mean, they're people tend to like them. I play every time I play them, I go like, these are kind of like janky and busted, but like they're still compelling. You know, yeah. Like they keep saying like, oh, we're gonna fix the free running component where like you'll never get stuck on anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's gonna be perfect this time. Assassin's Creed 3. If you haven't heard it yet, it's been out for a while. It's still janky. The running system, you still get stuck on corners. You're still getting chased by a group of, you know, red coats, and you're going around a corner, and you do that little, like, run up a wall where there's nothing to grab onto, and then you just go right back down, and at that point, they've converged on
it. Yeah.
Like, it's like, we're not ever going to get past all that stuff. They've built the technology in the first one, and they've kind of, like, refined it, and it still does the same things, but I still keep coming back to it. And I love the fact that they've given us a game that was, like, in what, Jerusalem and like the Middle East, the first one with Altair, they're at, up to that point. But there's no action adventure games that take place in the Middle East
right.
in like the, you know, that century and that point in time with those protagonists. And now in the American Revolution and the colonies and Boston and New York and the frontiers and stuff, like it's amazing that they make action adventure games pre-industry. Like they have you with like, you know, refilling your musket and stuff and using, you know, essentially all weapons that are all almost non-mechanical, and it's still awesome. Like, you're still, they fit magic in there. They just, it's magic. But I really like Connor. He's a cool character, and there's good stuff in Assassin's Creed 3. The naval battles, that is the reason to play the game. If you want an Assassin's Creed game with something totally new, you get to command these boats, and you're literally at the wheel, master and commander. You're like, full sail, and all your guys are like climbing the sails, and they drop them, and you're like full speed ahead.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then you're doing fleet battles, a single ship against like a British Navy of like 15 boats coming at you with armory, and they're cannonballing you, and you tell everybody duck, and all your guys come down, and you see the cannonballs blasting across your ship like something out of a Pirates of the Caribbean movie, with little bits of wood like exploding, and your ship's taking damage, and you're arming the cannons, you're like, fire, and everybody blows the guns and blasts 20 cannonballs into this fleet. That is, to me, if they gave us just a game with that mechanic, I'd play it.
Sweet.
If they made an online multiplayer with the fleet commanding stuff, I'll pay extra for it, Ubisoft. Make it a downloadable game, please. That's it.
So, can you board other people's ships in that one?
You can ram them. You can, like, actually, like, battering ram
the other ships.
If you get close enough...
Ram. Yeah, there you go.
Yes. If you get close enough to the other boats, you can actually see all of the British Navy, the Royal Navy, like, doing their...
They're doing their thing.
On their ship. Yeah. Like, you get close enough where you're, like, touching them, it's pretty intense.
That'd be kind of cool if there was a boarding element to it where they board your ship and then you can fight them off, or
you know, there may be naval missions that I haven't gotten to yet.
That does happen. That'd be pretty cool
might,
too.
I don't want to say yes or no. So yeah, that's what I'm playing. Assassin's Creed 3. I'm liking it. I'm liking it more than Assassin's Creed 2, and I know Assassin's Creed 2 is a big fan favorite.
You know, it's something. It's funny that you brought up a point how the Assassin's Creed series is annualized. And I don't know if I'm the first one to notice this or think about it, but there's another annualized series that seems to get a lot of flack for being annualized, which
Madden!
Is...
Madden!
Yes, Madden. Call of Duty. Have you noticed that? It seems like there's this big flack against it where people just look at it as this money-making monster, and yet Assassin's Creed, which started off as a very strong single-player-only game, because it was focused on single-player storyline, did incorporate multiplayer. It did cave into, you know, the multiplayer fetish, if you will. But people don't seem to rail against it for being an annualized
series. It's not
series.
A dirty word in Assassin's Creed, because it really, the multiplayer, it doesn't take away from the single-player experience. I honestly haven't even gone into the multiplayer component of Assassin's Creed 3 yet. I did play it a little bit in Brotherhood, and I enjoyed what was there. However, I think people who are buying the Assassin's Creed game probably don't really have a penchant to go them. Like, it's easily ignorable.
Right.
Whereas, if you're buying a Modern Warfare or Call of Duty or one of those annual first-person shooters, I think a majority of people buy those for the multiplayer.
Right. You know,
they're not looking for the single-player story, or they play that for a few hours,
right,
and then they go into the multiplayer. So it's kind of the reverse of those things. I think multiplayer added into any game that did not previously have it is some kind of scurrilous thing. Like, I don't quite get it. I like games.
Right.
I like everything.
Yeah.
I unless there is some kind of quantifiable damage that's being done to the single player component of any game, give me a multiplayer element, whether or not I choose to go in and play it. Give it to me. I'm paying $60 at retail for your game brand new. I want the most content possible, you know. Like,
right.
I don't hate on it if it's there, you know.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny. Because when Call of Duty started going yearly, people were like, "Oh, what the hell," you know. And when it happened to Assassin's Creed, silence. I thought that was kind of funny.
It's a different audience.
Yeah, I mean, it is a different audience, but it seems like most of the people that do rail against the Call of Duty series doesn't actually play it. And they just hate that there's one every year. Which I just thought it was kind of funny.
I just don't. Just ignore them. I mean, I feel as if I would probably not dislike Call of Duty or, you know, Modern Warfare.
Right.
Or, what's...
Black Ops 2.
Black Ops 2. Yeah, I mean, the most recent games, I probably would enjoy them.
Yeah,
I also probably would have no chance of...
Yeah, know, multiplayer, forget about it.
Yeah, get my ass handed to
me. I mean, they're not bad games. They're not poorly developed. You know, they're solid titles, you know. And I guess it's just the fact that popularity is a reason to hate it. I mean,
well, you know, you're always going to have, you know, blind contrarians.
Yeah.
You know.
What? In video games?
Yeah. Really?
People blindly being contrary just for the sake of starting an argument on the internet about video games? Never. It could never happen.
Especially not around here.
That's like a total urban myth. They don't exist.
You take your crazy opinions and get out, sir.
Now you're being a contrarian.
We like that word, contrarian.
Because word of the day.
Because we run into so many of them.
Yeah. What are you playing now, Gabe?
Right now?
Halo 4.
Well, I beat Halo 4.
Okay, well then you suck. Mike, what are you playing now?
Dr. Mario.
Dr. Mario?
Yeah.
Crazy. Tell us about Dr. Mario for those that have never played with drugs.
It's like
you'd be the guy.
The Super Nintendo Dr. Mario Tetris had a great component to it where one person would play Tetris and the other person would play Dr. Mario or vice versa.
Yeah.
And as you get lines in Tetris, it adds germs into the Dr. Mario side. And if you eliminate the germs, it bumps up the lines. It's that was awesome. They need to make an online, like, Nintendo needs to get some licensing back together and get that game back online. I know the license for Tetris is like ever moving from one company to the other. The Tetris company.
Well, doesn't EA have it right now?
They do, right?
They do. I think there are different levels of, like, the Tetris company. Like, you can have the license for just mobile, and then there's, like, console and
online downloadable medium.
Yep. Bootleg versions of Tetris. You have to get a license to actually make a bootleg Hong Kong multi-cart for NES. So Wii U. Wii U came out.
Yep.
You guys, I don't have a Wii U. I didn't get one. I'm going to wait. Mike, you're going to wait.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I'll pick one up eventually. I played the kiosk, and I enjoy it. The controller's comfortable. It's a nifty little machine.
Yeah, so
these guys, they got a Wii U.
I have a Wii U, and he has a Wii U. We all have Wii U's except for these guys. You know, they're U-less.
Yeah, we're like.
They dropped their Wii U's a long way.
We're Unix.
So, Gabe, since you have the Wii U, what are your initial impressions of said Wii U?
Well, first thing that really disappointed me out of the box. What? I was being polite, all right, but...
He likes to look into someone's eyes. He's feeling romantic.
Yeah. Everyone's looking at the back of his head.
So, okay.
For those listening at home.
Yeah, exactly. So, first thing that disappointed me off the bat was the fact that big firmware update that everyone's been talking about is actually necessary to access the basic features that they advertised. For example, Netflix.
I've heard
you can.
It's big. It's extremely large.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily... It's not necessarily the size of it that's the problem. I just think that it hit... day one, everyone all at once had to get it to really play the console, and Nintendo servers probably weren't ready for the demand. Because the day that I downloaded it, it was not as long as every story I've heard. I've heard 2 hours, 6 hours. You know, for me, it was 30 minutes, which is still longer than it should be because I have a really good internet connection.
I just got my modem fixed.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
My downstream, I had tested it after the hurricane, and it was like less than 1 megabyte.
Wow.
And I was like, something's wrong here. So I got modem replaced from my cable company, and now my downstream is a good 32 megabytes.
That's a good speed.
Isn't bad?
Yeah, that's a good speed. Good quality broadband as an average is 20. So you're doing well. But that was a disappointing start. But then once, you know, the update finally hit and I was finally able to get into the meat of the system, I was actually genuinely surprised with the first thing was the gamepad. The first thing I noticed, which probably not many people will, was the speakers built in. They're actually pretty good sounding. And they interact really well with the Wii U itself. For example, the menu music that the Wii U is playing while you're browsing in the menus, some of those notes only come out of the gamepad speakers. So if you have a surround sound system, it has this really cool aural effect where a certain sounds just really flow around you. It's really cool. And I'm actually very happy with the way they designed the menus. It looks nice. You can switch between the TV and the gamepad at will for everything that you can control it with. Game-wise, I played Zombie U, which I thought was going to be an okay game, and I was surprised.
That's the standout.
It's actually a very good game. I started it off, one of the things that everybody's going to want to know about are the graphics. Graphics are comparable to the 360 and PS3 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Gameplay-wise, it's something new. The mapping component on the gamepad. Yeah.
I hear it's like a roguelike, where it's like, you know, if you die, you stay dead kind of thing.
Yeah, that hasn't happened to me yet. I'm still very early in the game, but my understanding is that if you die, you become a different survivor. And you actually have to find your supplies from your previous character. So you'll find your old self as a zombie. You got to kill your old self to get your stuff back. Because you can potentially set yourself back for hours.
So basically, if you get all this crap, and then get killed.
Exactly.
When you start as a new guy, you're starting fresh.
Right, you're starting fresh all over again. So then you got to track your old self down, kill him, and then get your supplies back. Which is a really cool idea that I'm looking forward to trying out in person.
So you're actually going to die and have somebody come back and loot your body?
I'm gonna kill myself just in the name of science.
You could have your brother loot your body and then take over your life.
Yeah.
You guys look enough alike.
Yeah. I haven't tried it out yet, but I've also heard that the online component is that your friends' characters, if they die, can be zombies in your game as well.
Oh, that's neat.
And I'm not sure if their supplies carry over. I haven't tried it out yet, but a lot of interesting ideas there.
What about you? What are you playing on Wii U?
Well, I'm playing the Nintendo Land game that came with the black version, which is the version I think Dave got as well.
Same one I got.
I got that as well. If anybody's wondering, it's definitely the one to get. It's only $50 more than the white version. You get, instead of 8 gigs of memory, you get 32 gigs of memory. You get a stand that you can actually cradle to charge your
The gamepad
that you would not normally have. And you also get something that's really definitely worth it is you get double digital points, DDP, up until December December of 2014. So basically any amount of $50 that you purchase digitally, you'll get $5 in credit for, you know, more stuff to download.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
If you're going crazy with the downloadable games, which I kind of started to do,
as Mike is wont to do.
I always go crazy with the digital downloads. But, so that out of actual disc-based games, I have the Nintendo Land, and I have the, I just bought today, which I haven't played, so I'm not going to say anything about it. It's the Scribblenauts. But I've heard really good things about it.
Yeah.
But the game, to get download-wise, I just did it today, Little Inferno. You burn stuff. It's freaking awesome. It's so cool. Like, I saw the trailer, I'm like, what kind of game is this? Like, you're going to burn stuff. And then I heard that that was the game that the people that made World of Goo made.
Oh, that was them?
Yeah, so I'm like, I like World of Goo. It's interesting. I'll give it a go. And it is really addictive, burning stuff. But there actually is a lot more to it. There's, you know, combos that you can burn, you know, two items and you get some stuff. But there's also, like, there's also story. Like, there's a story going on. Like, it's been snowing.
I'm assuming it's about a pyromaniac.
No, it's actually, you know, from the reviews that I've read before I purchased it, it kind of, no one knows why it's been snowing. People think it might be like a nuclear winter or something along those lines. But they basically, it's kind of like a 50s or 60s style type of, you know, like those, what to do in case of a nuclear attack type of educational films.
Okay.
You see with like the commercials Duck for your own little inferno fireplace. But it's so freaking cool. Like, you can take a bus. It's a toy bus. And it has some people in it. And you burn it. And the kids start screaming. Which is
what would you
very satisfying.
Compare
you
it to gameplay-wise?
You really can't compare it to anything.
Huh.
It sounds so bizarrely, like, just, like, I'm not going to enjoy this, but it's so deep.
Huh.
And it's so interesting. It's definitely one of the better downloadable games.
Little Inferno.
Little Inferno. And
right here.
I also picked up, do you know the name of that? I have the game and I don't remember it, but it's the, it's like the Nano Attack Neo or Nano something Neo. It's something along those lines. It's basically a twin stick shooter, and it's basically, you can play it either on your gamepad, where you're not seeing anything on the TV.
Nano Assault Neo.
There you go, Nano Assault Neo. But it's basically a, you can play it on your gamepad or on a TV. If you're playing it on a TV, you will see stuff on your gamepad as well.
Right.
But the action's kind of frantic, I'm not looking at what it's doing exactly.
Yeah.
I know it's just a different image. And it's basically like, you know, if anybody's ever played that game, Starship? No. I'm awful with names. I really am.
Starship.
It's the one on PS3, and they also made it for
Super Stardust.
Super Stardust HD, where you have that like 3D type of planet that you kind of revolve over. It's kind of like that, but you're actually like you're over a microorganism, you know, or like a cell or whatnot, and it's definitely different shapes and whatnot. And as you're going over certain areas, you might not see what's, you know, there, but the graphics are really impressive. And the gameplay is really impressive. And I also picked up that Chasing Aurora game, which is, it kind of feels to me like kind of an updated, well, maybe not per se, but kind of like a Uniracers kind of game, where it's like you have basically a course that you're going, you're a bird, and there's different, like, winds that will take you certain ways. And if you're going up, you're going to have to hit or hold down the flat button to, you know, ascend. And then there's another button that will dive. It'll get you, you know, going on faster, but you have to basically, you know, race around. And there's multiplayer elements to it. I haven't played multiplayer at all. I have no friends on the Wii U. But if you guys want to be my friend on the Wii U, Nintendo would not allow me to have my Killer Squirrel nickname, which is, I'm on everything.
Is that too violent for a game where you burn people?
I know, right? Even though Killer Squirrel is all one word, it still sees killer, and it cuts it out. So I am what my eBay account is, which is Angry Woodchuck, all one word. So if you want to be my friend, Angry Woodchuck, to say, I saw you on the podcast, you're a jackass, but I still want to be your friend. And I will gladly accept anybody, especially cute ladies.
Is there a maximum threshold on the Wii U of how many friends you can have?
I don't know.
It's like 100, 200.
I
never get that, like, with like game systems where they give you a cutoff. Like, oh, you can only have 100 people on your friends list.
Because they know nobody has that many friends.
Well, isn't it something like 500?
Really protect all of us.
They bumped it up on Xbox. Yeah. Xbox 360 started out with, like, 150 or 200 was the max. And then if it's more now, they bumped it up. And PlayStation Network still has a pretty severe cap. I guess maybe because of all the sharing data of achievements, that would probably, maybe that's taxing to their networks. I don't know. But I want unlimited friends. you know.
Let me ask you one question.
Want that.
Wow, do you really picture yourself knowing 500 people online that you would consistently game with?
No, but I don't like limits. That's my problem.
Actually, there's one thing I wanted to bring up, and Mike, you kind of touched on the two different Wii U's, the 8 gig and the 32 gig. And one thing people might notice is that's a lot less space compared to the 360 or the PS3, which have, you know, 100 gig plus consoles. But this is the one thing that I feel like Nintendo did really right, is that you can use any USB hard drive you want, up to 2 terabytes, and the Wii U will accept it and use it.
It's got to be rated, though, at least a certain speed, right? USB 2.0?
I've been trying to find the direct answer to this, if the Wii U ports are 3.0. Mm-hmm. There's nothing concrete, but it looks like they are 3.0, which if they are, is really good. That's a good speed. And especially if you're going to have a 2 terabyte drive. But I think that's the one thing that Nintendo did. They hit it right on the head, and I hope Microsoft and Sony follow suit with their next consoles. Let us use whatever hard drives we want. Although Sony does that with the PS3.
Sure. This is one thing I wanted to ask, though, related to this, that the internal storage, you said that there was a big update right at the beginning, right? Do you remember how large that was? Because apparently there is a lot of issues with people who bought the basic package, mm-hmm. that this update... It basically takes up the entire internal storage capacity of the basic.
Yeah, because the OS is already taking up some of your space. Yeah. I think it's something like 2 to 4 gigs.
So basically the basic forces people to buy
the
external hardware.
Yeah, if you have the basic, you have to get some form of external storage right out of the box. Okay. Otherwise you are effed in the A.
Yeah. So just basically bringing that up so people know that if they're going to get a basic package, it's more or less going
to
be required.
If you need to get the 8 gig Wii U, it's safe to say that you could, if you have like a 32 gig USB stick at home, you can use that?
Right.
Is that like something to say?
Right.
Those are pretty cheap these days. You can get one for like $15.
Exactly.
The one thing that I'm not sure about, and maybe you've tried this or whatnot, but from one thing I understand is if you purchase a game, I think it still needs to be on the internal memory to play. I don't think it'll boot off the external. I could be wrong. That's just what I've heard. I haven't tried it.
That's the way that the Wii was for a while with the USB, or not the USB, the SD card slot.
Right.
You couldn't play, but they patched it later when people were starting to buy a lot of WiiWare.
Right.
They were like, okay, we understand that people have,
you
more storage on their SD card than they do on their Wii. You have to be able to play it right off there.
I don't think that's the case. I haven't heard that that was the case. So,
okay,
most things I've read were about playing your game
off of an external.
Right, because actually, it would be impossible for the 8 gig owners to get
Super Mario,
those things, like,
Wii U, or any of those other.
I think the Tekken game, off the bat, it requires more space than your Wii U has, so you have to be able to play off the USB.
Mike, you've probably rolled off frame.
No, I'm in frame.
Not you.
You might roll. There are two mics.
Mike Rosamilia just rolled completely out of frame, I'm sure, there. Good thing he wasn't saying anything.
I don't think anyone noticed he was gone.
Mike disappeared. Where's Mike?
All of our leading viewers and some of the guys from Germany. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was for Frankie.
Hey,
you're popular.
He's
taken, though, now. He's married.
Yeah.
I got all married between the last time we actually had a podcast.
Yeah, I was there. It really happened.
It happened.
Yeah.
And he didn't
everyone
even try to run, which is awesome. But knowing his wife, there's no need to run.
Nope.
Now that I've made this extremely
I have nowhere to run from. But people in the characters in the Walking Dead game are always on the run because there's nowhere to go in a zombie apocalypse. I'm shocked that you guys have not been compelled to find the time. Mike,
well,
especially being the Walking Dead fan that he is.
Yeah, I mean, I think the show's fantastic.
Shame on
you. I think, the show is just really, really good. What I've read of the comics is also very good. And the game, from what I have played of it, just the early chapter, is that it ties in nicely as like a supplemental material.
Glenn shows up in the first
episode
of the game from the series, and also Herschel in the first game. And Mike and I discussed on an earlier podcast how much we enjoyed Telltale's iteration of their Back to the Future sequel. The Walking Dead is this formulaically, I think, brings a lot of that same quality of storytelling and characterization to the table. In fact, the game is like 90% storytelling. It is essentially, I finished all 5 episodes. It is really just an exercise in decision making, in these life or death situations. From somebody who came from the earliest, I played the earliest PC point-and-click adventure games, the Sierras, the LucasArts, all of that stuff where this the history of this genre comes from, those things were very good at telling a story, but those things were also, you had to be exceptionally astute at figuring out puzzles,
right,
at overcoming obstacles with no help, you know, from the real world.
There was no internet.
Very few guides available. I mean, you could sit with a King's Quest game scratch your head over,
so
like,
obtuse sometimes.
How do I know how to do this?
Took me 2 years to beat King's Quest VI.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Walking Dead has the pedigree of Telltale, who was picking up the mantle of these LucasArts games when LucasArts essentially didn't want to do them anymore. The Sam and Max, the Monkey Island games, and what they did. Back to the Future had some, commendable puzzle-solving things in it throughout the course of the 5 episodes. But Walking Dead, there are instances where you're picking up items and figuring out what to do with them, but it's like...
They're very obvious.
Almost, yeah. Yeah.
Well, the thing about Walking Dead is that it's not just about making the decisions, it's about making snap decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. That's something you didn't see in Back to the Future
as much. Exactly.
But Walking Dead, it's almost like you're constantly under pressure at any given moment.
That's it. And they nail the psychology of you being... in the first episode, if you think that you're going to get away with a happy ending, if you think you're going to save everybody, the game beats you over the head in the very first chapter... Multiple times, you make a decision as to which character to save in this situation where Lee, the main character, has a choice of saving person A or person B. And if you think that it's the traditional formula of, I'll figure out what to do here, and then I'll figure out what to do here, if you go to save person A, 99% chance person B is a goner. And you have to make that decision. Who do I like more?
Yep.
Am I being more pragmatic in this situation? Or am I going with my heart? Am I going with my gut? Am I going with my survival instinct?
What's especially interesting, too, is at the end, they actually have a tally of how many people made which decisions.
Yes, and they carry that through in all the games. You can actually go back if you finish the first, second, third, fourth chapter. You can go back to the play segment, and you'll see an option to look at the current statistics. And as the game has been out for longer, certain statistical things have changed, but it's just fascinating to see like what percentage you're in. And in this last chapter, I'm shocked that I was in a minority. I was in a major minority in a decision that I made at the end of that game that I really can't get into specifics because neither of these guys have finished it without spoiling what is essentially one of the final decisions to make in the game. But I consider myself, and I played Lee with Clementine, the young girl that you pretty much protect throughout the course of this game. I played him very emotional, very, very much sensitive, and always making decisions based on the comfort of Clementine and the comfort of the people that are similarly sensitive. I never played Lee as a hard ass, and I never gave in to the characters like Kenny or some of the edgier characters that just wanted to, let's get to a boat or let's get to a car, a train, let's get out of here. I was always, I'm a sensitive guy, what can I say? And I like to play Lee that way, and that's the kind of ending that I chose for the game, and I'm shocked that after everything that everyone went through, a majority of the players picked what I consider to be a really, really cold, cold decision, like a really brutal choice at the end of the game, something I would never do. So, finish it.
Okay.
Get to the end, because I want to know what you guys picked. I'm seeing a lot of critics saying that this could be like game of the year material, just based on the emotional impact that it has on some people. And I can't think of the last time I played through an adventure game that made me like flat out put the controller down and cry. Like cry and cry and cry and cry in front of my television set. And my wife is like sleeping, like napping or something, and she gets up and she's like, "What's wrong?" And I'm just like, "Walking Dead game. Walking Dead game." It's really sad.
Made me cry.
That actually happened to me with Frogger.
We got crushed by the
truck. And it was very sad. I couldn't play that game for
Mike years. Actually cries like that every time he gets run over in Frogger.
That's why I'm glad that we have not had a Frogger tournament.
We won't
have it, because I would not be able to.
I think that will be my next suggestion for Nava.
I laugh every time I get run. I laugh every time Mike actually gets run over in Frogger.
He's a bastard.
Yeah.
But
sensitivity.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying, if you guys want to post your comments as to what your choices were, it would be interesting to see what our viewers had decided with the Walking Dead game.
In the final decision, the very last thing that Lee and Clementine have an opportunity to do, and I'm not sure, it may be slightly different based on the choices that you've made throughout the game, because I know that in the final episode, you're still getting to the same end point, but there are things that are dramatically affected by choices you've made throughout the game. The choices are, in most cases, funneled down to an eventuality, right? You can save certain characters, and certain scenarios occur that will prevent certain scenarios, certain dialogues, but you're always going to be at the same set. These are zombies, ladies and gentlemen. Mike is playing with zombies in slime. It's kind of things that they sell at the Digital Press Store.
There's a box of zombie.
We're all about the zombies, whether it's the Walking Dead game.
It really is.
I'm really going to be testing the resolution of my camera.
The Walking Dead comic. Digital Press is a very zombie friendly place.
I wonder if it's a commentary on the customers.
Probably.
Yeah. But I'm not certain if your final decision gets funneled down into the same choice, you know, the same A or B choice. But I want to know, what did you have Clementine do for you at the end? I don't know.
Well, now you just make it sound weird.
Yes. Of course, she's like 9 years old, so, I mean, that's...
That hasn't stopped some of our customers.
definitely won't stop our customers.
Starting?
Anyway... Walking Dead, great game. Played through all 5 episodes. Incredibly emotionally impactful, and there's almost no game. Like, it's just decision making, but it's so effective. It is so incredibly effective that even if it's just an interactive story where you're making minor decisions in the heat of the moment, it's fantastic. It is the high art of that genre.
So what you're saying is that's a plus video game.
PlayStation Plus is like a plus.
That's also a plus. Yeah. You see that segue?
I see that segue.
I'm very smooth.
That was a segue.
I'm like that with the ladies, too.
Yep, PlayStation Plus, $50 a year, and you get access to some crazy amounts of gamage.
Yes.
Especially if you have both a PlayStation 3 and a PlayStation Vita. Which
explain, since you got married, what had happened with PlayStation Plus and the Vita?
When a Vita and a PS3 love each other very, very much, they get together and they make a baby PlayStation. No, that hasn't happened at all.
But yeah. PlayStation Plus is now available if you're a Vita person.
Yep, you can buy in. Gabe bought in on the Vita, $50, and you get an instant game collection on Vita, which in the U.S. region includes Gravity Rush, Wipeout, Uncharted, and Mutant Blobs Attack.
And
Jet Set Radio.
And Jet Set Radio.
And also.
Final Fantasy Tactics Borderline.
The PSP
version. The PSP game.
PSP version.
I have a sneaking suspicion, being a Plus owner since day one, or a Plus subscriber since day one. What Sony likes to do is they give, you know, a couple key games. This was pre-Instant Game Collection, where on PlayStation 3, your Instant Game Collection typically consists of like four full-fledged PS3 games, and right. then, you know, four mid-tier kind of like $10 games, and then a bunch of minis and
right.
PlayStation 1 games. There really isn't enough full-fledged Vita software at this point in time for them to be giving you a free Vita game every month. They're going to burn through like
yeah.
the entire software library. What they're probably going to do is give us a lot of free PSP games,
right.
which is totally awesome. Good because yeah. there's a lot of great PSP software that's been put on the Vita marketplace and looks and plays great on the
or
Vita.
PS1 yeah. games. They'll be giving yeah. us PS1 games so you'll be able to play on the Vita as
yep.
well.
Just one problem.
What's the problem?
Got a big
memory
card.
Storage.
Yeah.
Too you expensive.
Have a big memory card.
Yeah. Memory
you know,
too
how much
expensive.
Does it take up?
Well,
real men have 32
yeah, yeah.
gigs.
For $100.
Well, it's not
this
even that
is,
much anymore. On Amazon are going for like, what, $88, $90 now, so...
You can find some.
You
can find some good
yeah.
savings. Yes, I
yeah.
would. I will say that
the MSRP is too high.
Sony's
yeah,
proprietary memory and
they gotta make their money, kids.
Yeah.
Pricing.
They're giving you free stuff.
This is reminiscent. It's in fact, it's identical to year one of the PSP, where the highest tier memory stick you could get was 1 gig, and that was $100.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're back to that, and which is also good news because it. Means hopefully that in the future,
hopefully,
they prices will go down.
Yeah.
But yeah, for 32 gigs, which in the real world of formatted card space is 29 gigs, you're looking at about $100, or if you're a bargain hunter, maybe 80, 90 bucks. The Instant Game Collection on Vita, if you only have a PlayStation Plus membership and you download all of the games, is about. It's about like 10 gig, not even, less than 10 gigs.
Jet Set Radio alone was 1 gig.
Jet Set Radio is 1 yeah. gig, Uncharted is 2 point something, Gravity Rush is 1 point something, Wipeout is less than 2, the PSP game is less than a gig, and Mutant Blobs is really small. So, yeah, probably about 8 gigs,
yeah.
roughly, which, you know... It's not bad, and an 8 gig stick on the Vita is about $20, I think.
You could also store just if you don't have the money to go out and buy a 32 gig. If you have a computer, you can store your games on your computer and just you know you're
yeah,
not going
right.
to
shift them around.
You're not going to
yeah.
have everything
or your PS3.
On time,
yeah, I was
going to
say you can put them on your PS3, right?
Yes, but
yeah.
you know you can do that, and it's definitely if you're a Plus member, and I'm sure you all know this. It's very smart, no matter what, whether it's PS3 or Vita. Just to put it in your queue
yeah.
and at least
purchase it.
Right.
it. You don't have to download it, but you purchase it, then you're good no matter how long. You know, even if you don't download Jet Set Radio for 8 months, you can still
you'll
have that option
yeah.
to download it. Whereas if you don't do that, you will not be able to get it after the month where they changed it.
And they're pretty good about last chance offers. They have a whole section that says going away soon. Like
yeah.
if you look in the Plus section of the PlayStation Store. But yeah, there's absolutely no reason not to purchase every single thing every week on Plus for $0 and just have it in your download list for future downloads. Or you can just navigate to the page on the store
right.
where the thing is and re-download it.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I now suddenly face the whereas for the first couple months of Vita I did have a lot of stuff to play. Now I have too much to play, which is a problem that I always want to have. I always want to have too many games and not enough time, rather than not enough games and too much time. So I started Gravity Rush. That's pretty awesome. And I'm looking forward to trying some other things out.
The last thing I did play on the Vita, and I beat recently, and I really enjoyed it, was... I know the title always confuses me. Zero Escape Virtue's Last Reward. Which is the sequel to 999 on the original DS. That was a really good adventure game.
Interesting.
Really good adventure game. And Frankie, I know you were saying that you played the old point-and-click classics.
Yes, I like
that. You would love both of those games. Mm-hmm. If you have a DS, definitely pick up 999.
Okay.
And then pick up Zero Escape Riku's Last Reward.
Is that similar to that Republican presidential nominee that had some pizza deal?
Herman Cain.
The 999. I think he got the idea from the game.
Probably.
Because the game came out first.
Okay.
That and SimCity. Right? It was that was the tax structure the structure of the distribution of resources or something.
And did he quote Pokemon too?
Yeah, he did.
He did multiple times.
Yeah.
Really?
He quoted a Pokemon quote in one of his speeches, and then he was called out on it, and then in his next speech he said, I believe this is a Pokemon thing, and he said something like, gotta catch them all.
I would have been more impressed if he would have quoted Jar Jar Binks. I'm just saying. That's all I'm saying.
Who says Pokemon can't be insightful?
I would have been impressed if he actually went out in like the Ash like hat and was like, I'm gonna be the president, and he just started throwing
Pokeballs at people.
That would be awesome. And they had him like carted out, thrown into a...
So I guess when he's filling his cabinet, I choose you.
Exactly. There you go. That would have been perfect.
It's like that. What's that guy that Howard D.
Yeah. The Pokemon campaign.
Catch 'em all.
Well, the great thing about politics, and there's not many great things about politics.
Not at all.
But know that within the next few years, from a generational standpoint, there will be a president in the White House that has most likely grown up playing games like Super Mario Brothers, and
maybe they even cried.
Grand Theft Auto. Right.
Or it's possible.
Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Vote for me.
It'll happen.
Pokemon Snap. Yeah. Maybe, they cried about Pokemon Snap. Who knows? So that's cool.
We've become a nation of wussies. Sad.
Hey, man. I challenge you to play through the Walking Dead game and not at least get choked up by the end. I mean, Clementine is really one of the great characters. The great helpless / resourceful,
she comes off like a real kid.
Yeah, I mean, the genuine emotional connection that you have to Clementine through both helping her and her helping you is exactly what they set out to do. They want you to become attached to Clementine. They want you to want to protect her, and they want you to feel great when you do protect her, and they want you to feel thankful when she helps you, and that's exactly what happens. It's like they pitch perfect nail that character, and by the end of that series, you care so much. And if you don't, then there's something wrong with you. You are a cruel, evil person if you don't care about Frankie.
Frankie has judged you.
I have. She's great. And I think she's really going to stand the test of time with a lot of other characters. I can't think of any off the top of my head because she's just so, I don't know, she's so great.
So you're right up there with Pac-Man.
With baby Pac-Man. You don't want baby Pac-Man to get you.
Baby Pac-Man was the best Pac-Man. It was both across
it was
the
pinball.
Hybrid of pinball and video games. It was awesome.
But it didn't do either one really well.
So I think it did both of them very well. You all suck. That game is awesome. Thank you. Anyway, I see. I'm looking at your magic tablet of happiness there. And I see something that's similar to what we were just talking about.
Oh, Pinball Arcade.
Pinball Arcade. Tell us your thoughts on Pinball Arcade.
That, man, anybody who has a platform where they can play Pinball Arcade should be playing it right now. That company has gotten some of the best licensed pinball tables in the history of pinball.
Absolutely, I completely concur.
And they not only have worked really hard to get these great license tables, but they've made them so physically functional. The physics on the table are right on, and when they're not perfect, they have patched them to make them better. It's awesome. It's really great. Let me actually boot it up really quickly.
He's going to boot it.
Just to get an idea of what is currently available. Farsight Studios.
Farsight.
They are the company.
It is available, just so you all know, it's available on the PlayStation 3 and the Vita. If you buy one,
and
you
Xbox
get both.
360.
Well, Okay. The Xbox 360 is also available for it. It's also available for the iOS and Android platforms. And it is, I think that's it currently now. But what's really awesome is that it's in beta for the Wii U. Now, what's awesome about the Wii U version is that when you have your gamepad tablet, right, your screen on your gamepad controller is going to have the DMD, or the score display. So you're going to be able to not have that block any of your table on your TV screen, which is awesome, and I will buy it day one. I already have it on iOS, and I have it on PS3 and Vita as well.
Yeah, you get the cross-buy on PS3 and Vita. Like, when you buy a table on the Vita version, you get it on the PlayStation 3 version and vice versa, which is very cool. I'm not double-dipping right now. I'm only playing it on iOS.
I double-dip.
Yeah.
That's just how I roll.
So far, the tables that are available, for those in the know, Tales of the Arabian Nights, Ripley's Believe It or Not, Black Hole, which is a Gottlieb classic from the 80s, Theater of Magic, Bride of Pinbot, which is awesome. Fantastic.
Great game.
I have yet to play Jackbot, the son of Pinbot.
Jackbot was okay. It was more like Pinbot, the original.
But Bride, I feel, is a superior table to Pinbot.
Yeah.
Medieval Madness, which is the greatest pinball machine of all time. And anybody who says any different has to come and fight me.
It's definitely a good...
Why don't you boot it up? Let's give it a...
I have to finish going through all the awesome pinball. Funhouse, Cirque Voltaire.
Which is actually another very well-received pinball table that's very highly sought after as a collector owning real pinball tables.
Gorgar, Williams 70s classic.
Which is the first game to have digitized speech.
That's right.
Gorgar speaks.
Monster Bash. Black Knight, the original Black Knight. No Black Knight 2000 yet. Mm. Creature from the Black Lagoon in 3D. Taxi, one of my personal favorites.
Yeah.
Harley Davidson.
Which is fun.
Third edition Harley Davidson.
Yes.
And both Elvira tables are in here. Elvira with the Party Monsters. And there's also Scared Stiff featuring Elvira. No Good Gophers. Big Shot, which is a really old Gottlieb table, but...
70s action.
Yeah.
Electromechanical.
And most recently, and probably most importantly, Twilight Zone, which proves that they are really getting the licensed property tables, which a lot of people thought they weren't going to be able to do because of these expensive relicenses, but the software is obviously doing so well that they're...
That was also a Kickstarter.
They did
do a Kickstarter with that, and they did a Kickstarter with the Star Trek The Next Generation. Although they said that with the Next Generation, I think it was less money that they required because they did so well with the Twilight Zone.
That's great. So, and then next up on their list of must-haves is the Addams Family Pinball. I don't know what it's going to cost for them to get that license. But next to Medieval Madness, I mean, above Medieval Madness, probably in the public consciousness, the Addams Family Pinball is probably one of the most successful modern pinball tables, and well... liked and well, probably the most distributed.
Yeah,
pinball.
Definitely a great table. They do really need to have Black Knight 2000 just for the soundtrack alone,
yes,
which is amazing. And also some of those other late 80s, early 90s Williams tables, like Fire was an amazing title. The dirt bike one, which I can't remember right now the name of. Bonsai Run, amazing title. And this is a company that you should really, if you're a pinball fan, even like minutely, you should really completely.
Well, what's great about it is you don't have to be like Mike and I are pinball fans, obviously.
Huge pinball fan.
But this is a great window into, unlike all these other, as much as I like a game like Zen Pinball on PS3 and Xbox, those are fabricated like pinball tables that didn't really exist in the real world. This is a window into history, like pinball history. You're playing actual tables that meant something, and you get to experience them in their like perfect forms. These are really well engineered. So the flippers are always going to work. The physics are like the ball is always going to, all the bumpers, the lights are all going to work, the sound effects are all going to work. you know, a lot of times you find an old table and it's, you know, flaky, you know.
Yeah.
Being able to get the best experience out of it is not always possible.
Some would say similar to a relationship with a woman. Flaky. Some. Mike actually was talking about that. Ladies, think about that in the future. This man here was quick to compare you to a flaky pinball table. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, so
that's what I've been playing.
I think it's also available for some of the handhelds. Like, is it available for 3DS yet? Or
I think there is Pinball Arcade. I think there might be a actual physical cartridge.
You're right.
It's a limited. I will look it up. You guys can.
We'll continue the conversation of pinball. If you are not a fan of pinball, you should be, because it is one of the original American pastimes. It's completely, like, it was, you know, complete American created game. And not that I'm a huge, you know, I'm not a supporter of America. It's, you know, the regime. Nonetheless, the pinball, I am a huge supporter of.
I was also on Mac.
Mac
OS.
You can download it from the App Store, which is similar to the iOS App Store.
No 3DS yet.
Okay. I guess it's a DS game then. I thought it was also like a download.
No, I think it's the original Williams, that Williams Classics pinball collection that they had. Steam Greenlight, they're trying to get it onto the Steam Greenlight program. It's in the top 100 in the 92nd position. Next up on their list, some of the planned tables are Attack from Mars.
Awesome table.
Cactus Canyon, which I've never played.
I have.
Dr. Dude.
Dr. Dude.
We saw that last time at the Pinball Classic.
Wizards Convention, yeah.
Firepower. Genie.
Okay, classics.
Pinbot, the original. Space Shuttle, which that's a good one.
Okay.
Star Trek The Next Generation and Victory.
Victory, actually a pinball table that I own.
Yeah. That's
actually a good one.
They actually have to go to your house to
actually, though, what's interesting is all these tables that they are creating, they have a table in their workspace for every table that they've made. So their attention to detail is amazing.
Yeah, and you get nice histories on all the tables. You get you know, the flyers, the original production flyer, and you get the statistics of how many tables were manufactured, how many were, you know, circulated, and who the creators were. It gives you the full history, which is the way that this is as a historical reference as well as just a great pinball game. So yes.
Speaking of history, then.
Yes.
Has anybody seen Wreck-It Ralph?
Yes, Wreck-It Ralph. I liked Wreck-It Ralph. I did see it in theaters, and I enjoyed it. I really did.
I still have not seen it.
Yeah, okay.
Tell us about it, Mike.
Without spoiling much.
Spoil everything.
Basically, the closest thing I can compare it to is Roger Rabbit, which is basically, you know, if you've seen Roger Rabbit, it was Disney movie where, you know, celebrated the history of animation, and it had brought in the Warner Brothers characters, the Looney Tunes.
Was it Disney?
It was Disney.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought it wasn't.
Roger Rabbit was Disney.
But it was under their Touchstone banner. That's why.
And, you know, brought in Bugs Bunny was there, Daffy Duck, you know, they all had cameo appearances. And Wreck-It Ralph more or less does the same thing, except for video games. It, you know, celebrates the history of the medium, and it brings in a lot of the faces, you know, Sonic, Pac-Man,
and the best,
Tapper,
Qbert's the best.
Qbert was down and out. He's a little down and out in Wreck-It Ralph.
I didn't see the movie, so I have no idea. Yeah. I don't see movies anymore. I end up time.
I've been a big fan of what Disney's been doing lately. You know, they did Princess and the Frog and Tangled and just really phenomenal films. And Wreck-It Ralph stands up with them, if not surpasses them. I mean, even separate from the gaming topic, it was just a really, really well put together movie that just really got got to the heart of what a Disney movie's about. You know, it's about, you know, someone trying to find themselves, ends up meeting unlikely allies, and manages to find some sort of happiness with who they are. And, you know, it's a classic story.
Right.
It's interesting, but, yeah, about Wreck-It Ralph. I hadn't even given it much thought. For Ralph, it's like, it's not even one of those Disney films where it's, you know, I'm the guy who, or like, I'm the character who is beaten down and then, like, becomes the prince or the king or the superstar or the whatever. It's like a self-discovery thing with Wreck-It Ralph where he's really uncertain about, is the thing he's been doing his entire life the right thing? Like, is it right for him? Is it what he should be doing? Can he achieve something more?
He wanted respect.
Yeah.
It's basically about, you know, this guy who doesn't get any respect, and he wants respect, and he manages to earn it his own way,
right,
in a very unusual way, and with a lot of adventure and a lot of, you know.
Yeah, it's the, you know.
With Qbert.
Qbert's there.
Qbert plays a pretty large role, actually.
There are some significant characters from the history of video games in the film. A lot of them are...
Not as cool as Qbert.
A lot of them are one-offs. A lot of them are there for one joke or one line. But it's great. It's great to see a character like Tapper or Paperboy or, you know, someone show up. Or even just walk through the background where you can recognize them and say, like, hey, that's...
You need to watch it more than once to see everything.
You know, Peter Pepper from Burger Time is, like, there in Tapper's bar having a drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, which is perfectly acceptable and right in the world.
Man, if I got chased by pickles and eggs and hot dogs all day,
I'd
want a drink. Kidding?
He does get chased
by
hot dogs.
And by hot dogs, he means penises.
German penises that stalk him from the web. Come here and lick my sausage.
Mike, you're insulting our one listener. Come on.
Hey, no. You're still awesome. Our one listener. You're awesome. He's taken.
Yeah,
he's available, though. He's taken, too.
We're 50% married tonight.
Yeah.
50% unhappy.
No,
I wasn't talking about the married people. I was talking about the unmarried people. We're unhappy.
I'm pretty happy.
He is just...
That's something unhappy people say all the time. That's something unhappy people say all the time.
Unhappy people say too happy all the time.
Anyway,
Wreck-It Ralph was fun. I'd say the first half of the film is really, really for the core gaming audience. I mean, it's where you're going to get most of the references, the referential stuff, most of the historical treatment of the classic 80s arcade stuff, all of those characters are going to show up. And then the second half of the film is where it kicks into high gear in the traditional Disney style, like problem being solved, characters interacting.
Misunderstandings, things of that nature.
Yep. Wacky misunderstandings.
Yeah. What I think is also clever about it, too, is that the references aren't just about, like, here's a character. Oh, hey, there's a character. And just where that, just the appearance is sort of like the ha-ha moment.
Right.
There's a lot of clever use of references. Like, for instance, one of my favorite throwaway gags in the movie, I don't think this is spoiling anything, is one visitor to the arcade walks up to big, modern arcade machine, fancy graphics and everything, and you see her pump 8 quarters into the machine.
Right.
And that's just, I mean, I bursted out laughing at that because we all know what that's like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it had the classic style, like, backlit red quarter slot, and it said, like, X8 or something like that on it. It's like, that's where we've
up in there.
Yeah. It has become that.
It's the devaluation of the dollar. I, of course, blame Michael Rosen.
Well, the devaluation of arcade. So in general, like, they don't exist, and even the ones that scrounge for any type of profitability are expecting at least $1 per game, you know, whatever game you're playing.
There are actually, not to go on a huge subtopic on this, and we should really maybe look into this in the future episode, but there are arcades that you buy the time that you're there. The games are set on free play, such as Yestercades in... Red Bank, New Jersey. Plug for them.
Oh, wow.
Think about me when I come back, being that I'm giving you a plug for our one listener in Germany. But nonetheless, there are places that do do that. There's a couple places, I don't know if they're still around in Pennsylvania, that you buy, you know, it's like $8 or whatever, $5, $8 an hour, and all the games are set on free play. You just pay for your time there.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
It's the future.
I mean,
the future is now. Grasp it.
Well, the future is until every arcade monitor that is in existence burns out, because there's no manufacturing of those anymore. So once they're all gone, that's it.
And then there'll be sad, sad people crying when they see Frogger being slatted on an LCD monitor where it's
just like not the same.
It's not the same.
Not the same as an actual picture tube.
It's just awful.
Oh, well. So, yes. Wreck-It Ralph, I give it 2 thumbs up. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's still out in theaters. It's doing well. I'm glad it did really well. I don't have any kind of, like, designs on a sequel. I hope they kind of leave it.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're in that kind of marketplace now.
I know.
Everything's
cars
the home port. Wreck-It Ralph home port.
Yes. Yes. Well, yeah.
The Wreck-It Ralph game on the iOS is super fun.
Yeah, they recently updated it. Disney was nice enough to bring the arcade cabinet. There was like 2 or 3 in existence, mm-hmm. to Classic Gaming Expo in Vegas. And they had a version of Fix-It Felix Jr. on that emulated the 1980s Nintendo Donkey Kong /
The early
80s Nintendo Versus type games. Mm-hmm. And it really felt like those. And the one that Apple had on iPhone and iPad, and also Disney had on the Wreck-It Ralph Flash website, mm-hmm. were not exactly like that. They kind of sort of looked like it, but it wasn't. And now, after the film came out, they updated the app. They have a 99-cent app available called Wreck-It Ralph that has Fix-It Felix Jr., that version, the good version, that was in that arcade cabinet, as well as 2 other games, like a Doodle Jump type jumping one with Ralph in Candyland or in
Sugar Rush.
And a top-down shooter thing, which is the bug game, Heroes Duty. But you could also get just the Fix-It Felix Jr. game for free still on iOS. It's called Just Fix-It Felix Jr. So check that out. It's free. It plays a lot more like the cabinet game that was a special one-off thing for them. But we got to play it first, because we're super cool at Classic Gaming Expo, and Disney was like, you guys are so awesome, we're going to bring this and let everybody play with it there. And then they released it. And we suddenly felt less special, and we all cried.
I still feel special.
You are special.
Well, thank you.
We think you're special.
Yeah. You're the only man who cries at Frogger.
It's true. But yeah. That and Big Black music. If anybody knows the band Big Black, you'll get that reference. Actually, you know what? It's not even Big Black, it's Shellac. I always feel really sad when he sings the song Copper, and he says about how copper is a great conductor, but it'll never be gold. That is sad.
Mike, you're the copper of the digital press.
Which one?
This guy here. He's the copper with the ladies. He's a good conductor.
So,
makes for decent cooking.
I can't cook.
Anyway, thank you for staying through with this amazing podcast.
We're back.
And
we're back.
Hopefully, we'll be back quicker. I hope to have this up in
at least
like
a year.
Actually, less than a week. So, you guys can. The date is December 2nd. So, if this is up later, you can give me grief. Which I always get grief anyway. But nonetheless,
as the listener hears this on January 31st.
It will be up within a week. I think we ironed out the bugs. Maybe.
But the most important thing to know is that we're back.
Yep.
And better.
And better than ever. And we will see you again next time.
And ladies, Rose Amelia is available.
Still.
Still. Hey, you know. Thank you for spending this time.